This week's episode is kindly sponsored by Devrin Direct. Devrin Direct are your local food and drink cash and carry. Stocking the leading brands of soft drinks, confectionery, crisps, snacks, and household items at low, low prices. Now fully licensed to sell alcohol with hundreds of different wines, beers, ciders, and spirits to choose from. Devrin Direct are open to the general public and trade accounts are also welcome. There's ample free parking right at the door and they're open Monday to Friday from 9 till 5 and 11 till 4 on Saturdays. Pop in and see for yourself at Station Bray Macduff. Just behind the platform, you'll find Devrin Direct. Beware of the odd swear.
There's Bremner. He's got two waiting, including Peter Wave. 2-0 Villa. Mortimer. Bremner again and continued his run. And it's going to be a tap in here for Peter Wave. 4-0.
10 inches away, 9, 10 yards. Back it comes to Shaw. And justice is done. Gary Shaw gives Villa the lead. To go. Marcos broke out of the defensive wall, but Villa got on with it. Bremner played the little ball back in, and how well Shaw finished.
Oh. Williams prepared to adventure down the left. There's a good ball played into Tony Morley.
We're screaming on the
front. And he's done it! Villa have won the European Cup! Peter Wynn's goal!
The captain's got the European Cup!
What a night indeed for them all. Des Bremner and his captain Dennis Mortimer holding a Villa banner they collected off the pitch.
Walters, beautiful skill. Peak sticks with him though. Oh, Walter's superb. Bremner! Well, we were asking for goal mouth action and we got it.
A very warm welcome back to the Beyond Canal Park podcast. Local football has seen some mixed fortunes for our clubs. Devrin side again felt a defeat this weekend, going down 3-1 to Colony Park. The Vale have now beaten Lossie twice in the bounce though, needing penalties to knock them out of the cup this weekend after a 6-0 mauling the week before. White Hills took part in a thriller with Glen Tanner on Saturday, the game finishing 5-5 in a match which defenders obviously boycotted. In wider Scottish football, it was a really sad day, as one of the greats of Scottish management in particular lost his battle with illness. Rest in peace, Walter Smith, a man whose Rangers teams gave me so many of my early childhood football memories and also gave us Tartan Army faithful plenty to sing about in dark times. Now on to a guest who has every right to be a great of the Scottish game himself. Growing up in Fogie, Des Bremner went on to win the highest honour in club football, the European Cup. He talks to me about his Devrin Vale days, cup finals against the Old Firm with Hibs, disappointment of not gaining more Scotland caps, and of course, winning the First Division, European Cup and the Super Cup with that great Aston Villa team of the early 80s. Des was amazing to chat to, and here's what he has to say. It's a real honour and a pleasure to welcome our first European Cup winner to the show, and indeed, Fogie's only European Cup winner, surely. A man who started his career at Princess Royal Park with Devon Vale before joining Hibs and then the famous Aston Villa team of the early 80s. He also represented Birmingham Fulham during his top-class career, and here to tell us all about it is Des Bremner. Des, a warm welcome to the show. How are you doing this morning?
I'm very well, thanks. Yeah. Bit cool this morning, but yeah, I'm fine.
Oh, well, it's pouring rain in Banff, so... That's no surprise.
We're not quite that bad down here.
So, Des, I was like my guest to take me back to the start and where the love of football began. You obviously grew up in Fogey. What are the memories of growing up playing football around here?
Yeah, well, it's great memories. Obviously, growing up in Fogey, I mean, you're talking about my football career. My football career first started in, with the headmaster at the local school, Mr. James Shand. Uh-huh. Jimmy Shand was headmaster at the school. And at a young age, I mean, I was playing with the under 15 teams prior to going down to Banff Academy.
Yeah.
So I'd started quite young, but it started, as I say, from the man called Jimmy Shand. He started me off in the start of my career, you could say. Obviously, prior to that, I'd played various primary teams. But I was at the start again, introduced the county teams, the Banff county teams, it was as such.
Yeah.
Because obviously, he pushed for that sort of thing and helped me in that sort of area.
Brilliant.
As well. Like,
would he have been the main influence on your football growing up at that stage? But you were a big footballing family as well, and sporting family.
Oh, no, definitely. But obviously, my dad was obviously played football himself and played a decent level up there. Like, you know, so obviously he's always encouraged whatever sport it was, the whole family.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously I got an older brother's a jockey, so he was encouraged to do that. And with many a time and trips down to the north of England, he had to see my brother Keith. Whether it be even like say Edinburgh, you know, the local courses, Ripping and that sort of places, just to see him. And obviously I'd keep my father company for a couple of those journeys as well, which was great.
Great stuff.
And obviously you've got Kevin as well. Obviously he's been down here for a period of time, first starting at coach, then now living down Gillingham way.
That's right. I had Kevin on, and it's his kind of Devon Vale team that I first started watching as a boy when he was player manager up here. So that kind of set my footballing journey on its way as well. You've got a sister who represented Scotland at squash or badminton?
Well, my sister has done very well at squash in her latter years.
Yeah.
It's obviously the veteran level of squash. And she was actually world champion. I forget now what age bracket it was at. But it was over in Finland. And my mum and dad and my sister went across to see her playing in the finals of the, as I say, I don't know what age group it was at the time. I lose touch with that sort of thing. she didn't realise at the time she had an actual burst ulcer.
Oh,
she had bad stomach pains and thought it was just indigestion. She was taking a couple of pills and that just for the indigestion. And then she realised after the event, she'd won the event, she had a burst ulcer and she was taken into hospital.
Oh, jeepers.
So my other sister was across the net. Had to stay with Pauline while she was in hospital for a short period of time there.
Oh, dear.
So it was a great achievement in one way, but a great achievement in another.
Yeah, damn, but there must be someone in the blood in that Bremner family anyway. Or sport.
It's just one of those. It's very sporty. Obviously, my older brother played, and obviously, same. My other brother Keith's sporty, and my other sisters play squash, badminton, whatever, and hockey, that sort of thing. So it's, we're probably encouraged it at every turn to get involved in whatever sport it was.
Brilliant. What about pro teams? Who were you supporting back then, and who were the heroes you liked watching on the pitch?
Obviously, I was an Aberdeen supporter. Aberdeen supporter. I've always been an Aberdeen supporter, like, you know. And didn't have much success at that time. Was after I got involved with football myself, they've got success, like, you know. And my older brother, Sandy, he actually went across and saw the team winning.
Gothenburg.
The final there, like, so he's across and saw that, which was a great result for the Dons, like, you know.
I think it was probably softened for you by if it was to come at Aston Villa, but we'll get on with that later on. Your first club then was Devon Vale, down at Princess Royal Park in Banff. Were you there for a young age?
Well, I've been there for a young age. Again, my headmaster, Jimmy Shand, actually played in Aberdeen Youth League with Banks of DA.
Okay.
And that was through Jimmy knowing a guy in Aberdeen, a guy called Pat Gerrard, who ran the team.
Okay, aye.
And obviously I went down for a trial and obviously played there for a period of time, maybe a couple of years, whatever it was. So that was a grinding for me, a good grinding, because the team I played for, Banks of DA, they were actually the nursery team for Aberdeen apprentices at the time. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, the lads that played for us didn't actually go and make it any great level. I think Chick McClellan was probably the only one that did make it a decent level, the lads. But, I mean, Joe Smith, who was the younger brother of the great Jimmy Smith, Chinky Jimmy, He played it with Banks of DA with myself and another Jimmy Smith, a guy Charlie Elvin, Andy Melville, that sort of guys, So it was a good level. We were seen as one of the top teams in the youth team in the youth league at the time. So that was always that was good. And every Saturday, as I say, got the bus in from Foggy to Aberdeen. Went up to my auntie's in Heatherfold by Sunnybank pitch there, and she fed me in water before I went down to the game on the afternoon, and then back on the bus in an evening time. So that was my first taste of a real level of football,
Okay. So how did the move?
And then obviously once that finished, obviously with Devon Vale.
Aye. So how was the Highland League for your development? First taste of adult football.
When I did play with Devon Vale, I actually played the centre back.
Okay.
In defence, because obviously I'd been converted from a young kid as a midfielder to fullback. Again, that was Jimmy Shand. I'd gone to county trials, I think it was up in Aberlour. I got through one trial, and he says, I think we need to change you because the level of players we've got in the midfield, he might not quite make it. Obviously, he was one of the selectors, so he knew the inside info with other selectors. So I think we should maybe convert you to a right back, because I think you've got a great chance of getting a team as a right back.
Okay.
So that's when I started my career as a right back in under 15s. I think it was under 15s at the time, schoolboy county team.
Yeah.
And right enough, I got into the county team, played various games at the under 15 level with the county team.
Okay.
And then coming to Devon Vale, as I say, latterly, from there on, I went and played in the youth league as a right back.
Hmm.
And during that time, I actually represented the Scottish amateur team and played the local internationals against England, Wales, and Ireland.
Brilliant.
At that level, as a right back, came to Devon Vale. I'd finished my time in youth league, was too old for that, and then I was back home, and there was nothing on the horizon. So I thought, we'll go to Devon Vale and get some games there and see what develops from there.
Aye.
And as I say, at that stage, I was playing as a central defender.
Okay. And who were you playing with at the Vale back then? Was it a good team?
I can't actually call me. And I always remember Zane Watt, a young lad who was at Barham Academy with me at the time as well, and he was in the team at the time. I can't really recall any names other than that. I remember a lad, Brian Sheen, a lad from Port Soy. Now, he didn't actually play for Devon Vale. I forget. I always remember playing against him one time down at Princess Royal.
No, okay.
If I can't recall who you actually played for, Brian. But it was a kind of probably older lads in the team, which as me coming out as a young lad, 18, 19, whatever, 18 it was at the time. And I mean, I didn't actually play that many games. I probably played about maybe 8 games.
Okay, aye.
And obviously, again, it was thanks to the ex-president of Devon Vale, Lad Armstrong, Mr. Armstrong, and who had been a pro at Hibs in his younger days, but that was broken up by the time of the war, and obviously he left to go to the war.
Yeah.
And when things changed after that, he came back. He no longer was a pro at Hibs, like, you know.
No.
So he'd got in touch with Eddie Turnbull, who was manager at Hibs at the time.
Great.
And asked if there was any chance of me getting a trial with Hibs. And now, I don't know if it was coincidental, but when I played in that youth league in Aberdeen, Eddie Turner was actually manager at Aberdeen at the time.
Yeah.
And there was mentions of possibly getting a trial with Aberdeen, which if it had happened would have been great for me. Like, you know, not to say that I would have maybe made it at Aberdeen at the time. Because Aberdeen being my club I supported.
That's right.
So obviously there's a trial range, went down for initially 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. Played in the reserves there at the time, which were a decent reserve team at the time, Hibs.
Yeah.
Because the first team were quite a decent level then as well.
Sweet.
And then a 2 week was extended to 3 weeks and then 4 weeks. And I was given a contract after 4 weeks, or the offer of a contract, which obviously I jumped at after 4 weeks. And that was the start of my pro career.
Uh-huh. It must have been some jump then for Highland League straight into the sort of top league in Scotland.
Well, fitness-wise, definitely. Aye. You know, my first week or two, I used to be going in training in the morning and then back in the afternoon with the younger lads, youth team lads that they were classed as then. So I know that I always remember my thighs were like floorboards are really so hard and tight. In an evening time, I just had to have a bath every night just to try and loosen off the muscles.
But you had to put in that work to get to that level so that the rest of them were at.
Yeah, well, without a doubt. Like, I mean, I was quite fit, but as I said, fitness levels for myself in the Highland League and the training we got at that time wasn't sufficient for being full time. So, as I say, I got up to speed within a couple of weeks, I would have thought. And, you know, being a reasonably fit lad anyway, it was great after that.
Magic. Some great teammates over the years at Hibs as well. I think I see Pat Stanton, Joe Harper was there as well. Jackie McNamara's dad.
Yeah. I got introduced to Hibs at that time. I signed a pro contract, I think signed pro probably early December of 72, I believe. Mm-hmm. And then within about 5 or 6 weeks, I was actually playing the first team.
Aye.
Unfortunately, the right back was a great right back at the time, John Brownlee.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Had broken his leg in the following January. I think he was playing against these five, broke his leg. So I was a natural next replacement as a right back,
aye,
even though I'd only been there a short period of time. So you could say I was thrown in at the deep end and managed to survive.
Do you remember much about your debut?
Debut was at Tannadice. Uh-huh. Obviously, we had a decent team. Jim McLean was manager there at the time. So, obviously, he produced quite good teams. And,
nice.
You know, it was a difficult game for me, first game. I mean, I was classed more as a defender, like, you know, as I say, right back. But I was always encouraged to get forward because John Brownlee was probably one of the first overlapping right backs. It was of note, so it was kind of hard to fall on from him and be at his level, especially my first game.
Aye.
but we got through it, and I can't recall the result, possibly got a draw, I think.
Okay.
But as I say, that was the start of a great career at Hibs.
Yeah. What was Eddie Turnbull like as a manager then? I think when I had Joe Harper on, I think he got on really well with him, didn't he? He said he was a great manager.
Well, obviously, I think he's an old-type manager, much a disciplinarian, keep in your place, like especially younger lads, obviously, which is the case, even so now, like, you know, but disciplinarian, very much a fitness lad, but he was a great coach, a great football brain, like, you know, and you could see that in the teams he produced and how they played.
Yeah.
Obviously, I mean, he possibly had favourites, and I think Joe was a favourite because obviously Joe was a great little goal scorer at the time.
That's right.
You know, and he had him at Aberdeen, and obviously latterly took him back to Hibs from Everton after his time down Everton. Mm-hmm.
That's right.
But as I said, the team at that time, we were quite a really good team at the time, great players throughout the whole team. Mm-hmm. Were a good level of players. And I say, we were quite competitive at that time. We were there or thereabouts with the Rangers and Celtic. Aye. You know, we were the ones who were competing with them at that stage.
Yeah, and I believe you played in 2 cup finals in your time at Hibs. The first one was a League Cup final against Celtic. 6-3, was it?
6-3, that's right. I think, Joey claimed a hat-trick that game, but it's been debated ever since. I think Joey scored a hat-trick and Dixie Dean scored a hat-trick. Which was the second hat-trick he scored against him, I think. Okay. He'd have a scoring hat-trick against him. Aye. So, yeah, that was a cup final. League cup final would disappoint him. But the next one, obviously, the FA Cup, the Scottish Cup final, I should say, was even more disappointing because that went to three games.
That's right, 2-0 draws before
the... Unfortunately, they were beaten by an own goal by Arthur Duncan scoring an own goal at the time.
Oh, dear. That was Rangers, wasn't it?
But it was great, as I say, it was a great experience, obviously. Right. You'd have loved to win, but unfortunately, we just didn't manage to make it.
No. You got some under 23 caps for Scotland, I believe, in this period, and your only Scotland full cap came against Switzerland while you were playing for Hibs, is that right?
That's right, yeah. Well, Willie Ormond was the Scottish manager at the time, and obviously, Willie Ormond being a former Hibs player. He probably had spoken with Eddie Turnbull. I'd been at a few Hibs games, and obviously I got the opportunity to play for under-23s, which again, I think in total I played about 9-10 games with under-23s, which again was a great experience. And as I say, I got the one opportunity to play from a full squad and came on as substitute for Ray Keane-Dalglish.
I read that, yeah. Some moment, that.
Yep. So that was big boots to fill.
I bet you, eh? Do you feel that you should have more cups? Obviously, you went on to become a European Cup winner. Were you in more squads?
No, I never ever got the opportunity. I was obviously disappointed, you know, because playing down in England and playing at a good level and being a top team at the time. But it seemed to be the case in the team I played with at early stages of the team that... none were getting the opportunity to play at the international level. Mm-hmm. Over the latter day, that the likes of maybe Alan Evans obviously got the opportunity with the full squad, and then Peter Wirth, Gary Shaun, and Tony Morley with the English team. But early doors, it was slow in getting the representations in the national team for some reason. I think what was maybe disappointing for me was the fact that Jock Sean was the manager at that time, but I think the policy he introduced, what I'm told, was that the Anglos who came and played for Scotland always got a bit of stick that they were only just coming up and going through the motions playing for the national team. Mm. And Jock Sean kind of changed the policy that he was going to play as many homegrown players as he could. So that probably worked against me at the time because, again, I was led to believe that Jock Sean was a bit of an admirer of me when I played, but not that great an admirer. He took me in the Scotland squad. So, no. But that's football. You don't worry about these things. You just get on with things.
Yeah.
And as I say, it didn't affect too much to my career too badly going forward.
No, that's right. But I can't imagine nowadays. You know, the strength and depth that Scotland had at that time must have been something else. Because nowadays, if Scotland had a European Cup winning midfielder, then they'd have 100 odd caps, I would think.
Well, that's true. I mean, there was a top quality players at that time. I'd say Dalglish, Hartford, Lisa, Souness, and that sort of thing. Players like, so it was obviously a difficult time to break into. So, but as I say, it was. That was one of my disappointments in my career, but as I say, it didn't hold me back as far as my club career was concerned.
No, not at all. So, found it interest to start then for clubs doing in England. Were there more than Villa in for you, and why did you choose to go there?
Well, I think it started initially up in Scotland, never mind down in England. Obviously, I'd been there for a period of time, and I was actually tapped up by Billy McNeil at Celtic, John Clark. At one stage, and then obviously a lad I played with at Hibs, George Stewart, he knew Jim McLean, and Jim McLean had spoken to him about myself possibly going to Dundee United, and then pre-season training, I used to do a bit of pre-season training with a guy, Stuart Hogg, I think. Stuart was his name, might be Graham, who was an athlete who trained a group of athletes in Glenrothes, because I used to live in Kirkcaldy. So I used to go up and train with them there prior to going back to the full-time training with Hibs.
Brilliant.
He was a good friend of John Gregg.
Are you?
Mm-hmm. So he kind of tapped me up a little bit for Rangers when John Gregg was a manager. So with that being the case and nothing happening at Ibs, I went to see the manager and I just said, look, I've been here a period of time now. I feel I need to go and challenge, try it myself. I'll get a move to try myself at a higher level or a better level.
Yeah.
So I would be looking to get a move. He says, and he turned around and said, right, he says, you've been effing tapped up, you have, haven't you? I says, me? Tapped up? What you mean? He says, you know what I effing mean. You, somebody's tapping you up. He says, but leave it with me. He says, I'll have a word with the chairman.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously a week or so had gone by and there was nothing coming back from a manager. And so I've gone and knocked the door again. And of course, he's in the middle of shaving, isn't he? So he slaps off the shaving foam off his face. Yeah, what is it? What do you want? I says, well, I just wonder if there's any news on our last conversation like a couple of weeks ago. Mm. And you've not been in touch since then about anything. I was just, well, yeah. He says, well, I had a word with the chairman. He says, yeah, well, are you basically, but you'll not be going anywhere in Scotland. He says, there's no way that'll happen. If you're going anywhere, you'll be going down to England.
Aye.
And so that was left at that, like, you know, and again, it was left. And it come to the Saturday, we were actually playing Celtic at Easter Road.
Okay.
And we always went to the Northbridge Hotel, it was known as then, by the railway station by Waverley, for a pre-match meal. So I've walked into the foyer of the hotel and just bumped into Tom Hart, who was the chairman at the time. a really nice guy, like, you know, really a Hibs man, and put a lot of money into the club at the time. And he says, oh, he says, the manager had a word with you then? He says, well, no. He says, what do you mean? He says, oh, there's a club coming to watch you today. It's an English club coming to watch you today. And so he said, no, I said nothing. He says, no. He says, oh, well, I had a word with him. He said he was going to be making you aware of it, like, you know. So we've gone for a pre-match meal and I'm looking across and thinking, well, you'll give me a nod and have a chat with me, but nothing happened. So we're going down to the ground for preparation for the game in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
And prior to the game, you're always going to see the manager in his little office just off the dressing room, like, to get your complimentary tickets to leave for your friends, family, uh-huh, whatever it was at the time. So obviously I've gone in, got my tickets, and I'm thinking, well, he's got to say something, like, you know. So I picked up a couple of tickets and gone out the door and just put my hand in the door, and he says, oh, he says, by the way, he says, there's a team here to watch you today. He says, oh, yeah, okay, no problem. Now, I can't recall. I think it was Tom Hart that actually told me at the time. No, it wasn't. That wasn't the case. I wasn't told the team who was watching me on the day. So we've got on with the game, and obviously got on with the game, and we've got beat 3-0. I've done my usual, play my usual game, and run about and fetched and carried and try and create as what I could.
Yeah.
And I thought I'd done all right, like, you know, but obviously getting beat 3-0, it didn't go down too well with the thoughts of maybe anything developing from it. So I've gone home, and on a Sunday, we might have gone out for a drive just to get out with the kids at the time. But obviously, the fact that maybe a phone call, there wasn't mobile phones at that time, so if you're going to get a phone call, it was in the home phone, like, you know. So we thought we'd better stay indoors, and obviously staying all day and all afternoon, and come night time, and nothing had happened. I thought, well, nothing's going to happen. And until I got a phone call at 10:30 at night, and this was Eddie Turnbull.
Okay.
He says, meet us at the airport 7:30 tomorrow morning. We're going down to England. And that was it. Short and sharp. I was thinking, bloody hell. Not much water, like, you know.
No.
So obviously, I got up early in the morning, got across for 7:30 at Edinburgh Airport. Walking in the airport, who did I meet? With Tom Hart, the chairman, again.
Okay.
He says, oh, so your manager give you, let you know what's happening, is he? I says, well, no, he says, he gave me a call 10:30 last night and said, just to be here for 7:30, we're going down to England. That was as much as I know. He says, what? He says, I spoke to him yesterday morning, he was going to give you a call right away. He says, so you don't know where you're going? I said, well, going down to Birmingham, it's Aston Villa. Mm-hmm. I says, okay, actually, great. So that was sorted, we're going to fly, go back down to Birmingham, and Ron Saunders, the manager at the time, Aston Villa, picked us up to the airport and took us out to the training ground. Mm. Obviously, I mean, Ron Saunders was wanting me to train with the team at the time, but obviously circumstances anything could have happened during training or whatever. So Tom Hart and Eddie said, no way he's going to train. Like, you never know, he can pick up a bad injury or whatever. So I was sat in the training ground looking out the window at the lads training in the morning. Obviously, big Ken McNaught was there, who had played within the Scottish Amateur Youth team. And afterwards, later in time, I learned that Big Ken had put my name forward.
Okay.
At a team meeting, a meeting he had with Ron Saunders and the senior players, said they were looking for midfielders or whatever, or fullbacks. Did they have any players in mind? So that's where my name was put forward from Big Ken McNaught. So I've got a lot to thank him for. So obviously that was happening. So about maybe 12, half past 11, 12, the lads were still out training. Ron Saunders came through after having a little break from the chat with Turnbull and Tom Hart. He said, "Are you all right? Yeah, you have a cup of tea and everything else. The lady's looking after you as far as I said, yeah, fine." He says, "We're still in discussions yet." And he says, "But don't worry," he says, "you won't be going back home." So that was a great thing to hear. I thought, great, fantastic. So obviously things got finished off and I got up in the hotel for the night and obviously stayed down until the weekend. And then after the game of the weekend, the first game of play was against Arsenal. But at that stage, obviously, I'd been converted to Hibs from a fullback to midfielder, obviously. And who was I playing against but Liam Brady? So I thought, what a baptism this is.
Baptism of fire, that.
Yeah. But initially, I was playing centre midfield from the first few games. I think we drew that game as well. But after three, four, five games, I think maybe Saunders realised that it obviously my energies, I couldn't use my energies in the centre of the midfield because it's more a holding player than a right or left sided player who got forward a lot. So Dennis Mortimer, who had normally been playing centre midfield, went back into the centre midfield, and from then onwards I was a right midfielder. Right midfielder come right winger at time, because as you know, we didn't have a right winger at the time. A winger was Tony Morley playing in left wing, like, you know. That's so myself and Kenny Swinney Swain shared the opportunities getting forward down that right wing at time yourself during those games. So that to me was a fantastic fantastic opportunity going down to Aston Villa. You know, I'd read about Aston Villa a bit more when they were in the lower divisions and the capacity crowds they used to take, the supporters used to take away for the home games and that sort of thing. So that, I didn't really know much about Aston Villa as a top first division club.
But Villa Park's a great place as well, a great stadium, isn't it? Good atmosphere in there when it's rocking.
Well, it was a great ground then. It's an even better ground now. And as you say, the atmosphere is fantastic, especially the full house.
I was there at Euro
45,000. You know, so yeah, it was great. But as I say, that was the start of a great time at Aston Villa. Not to have known at that time what was lying ahead.
Well, I was going to ask you, could you tell for that first season there that Villa were a team going places, or was it a surprise?
Obviously we were a decent team. I think we finished about maybe 10th in the league that first season. And then after that, as a lot of people say, Ron Saunders bought the final piece of the jigsaw, who's Peter With, who we bought from Newcastle. I think it cost $500,000 at the time, which obviously at that time was a lot of money.
I was going to say, it was reported that you were $275,000. It must have been a pretty big fee itself in 1979.
Well, yeah, it was a big, decent fee at that time. It was $275,000 with, I think it was Joe Ward.
Okay.
The striker who'd been taken down to Aston Villa, didn't quite make it down there. He went back to Hibs. In a swap deal, he was kind of valued at $50,000 as far as it went. So it was $225,000 plus $50,000 for the Joe Ward. So again, $275,000, which, as you say, was quite a decent fee at that state at that time of the game.
Okay. So what was Ron Saunders like then? He obviously could build a good team. He knew the pieces of the puzzle that he needed to put together, obviously.
He was very similar to Eddie Turnbull, if I'm quite honest. Very much a disciplinarian. Obviously played a decent level himself, like Eddie had.
Aye.
He played as a striker, and obviously down Portsmouth was his main club where he got most of his success. But he had a good scoring record as far as strikers are concerned. So, yeah, very similar. A great coach. Knew what he wanted. Obviously, he'd put the team we had at that time together over a cup, two or three seasons, possibly.
Yeah.
And he knew exactly what he wanted from each player on the pitch, and he made them aware of what he expected from him as well.
Yeah.
You know, so it was one of those that I think the team we had were a great experience in the team, but obviously good young lads coming through, the likes of Tony Morley, Gary Shaw, and Gordon Cowans, and the likes of Colin Gibson and Gary Williams, who both were vying for the left-back position. So there's a good balance of young and old there, and obviously good experience and good abilities.
Great squad of men to play with.
Oh, fantastic. Great squad.
Great unit.
Yeah. I mean, training was quite intense. We always finished off with a five-a-side, because Ron Saunders liked his five-a-side, and it was like the old guys against the young guys, and of course the experience always shone through. He was through the young guys. They won the odd game now and then.
A few injuries coming
to play with us, and so we'd never finish unless we were winning. So most of the time, anyway. But it was really, really good and competitive. The little five sides used to have, and as I said, training was quite. He was very much a fitness guy, like Turnbull was as well, and we were a very fit team. Very fit team.
And there was obviously other Scots in that squad, like there was in all the great teams back then in England. Wait, did you naturally gravitate to them, or who were you close to?
Well, Big Alan and Kenny, obviously, the first one, first time there, obviously, my ex-teammate, it was Alex Cropley was still there.
Okay.
Unfortunately, Alex was kind of coming to the end of his career because he had some bad injuries, which obviously affected his play. So he was there for a short period of time, maybe the first season I was there, and I think he left after the end of that season. And unfortunately, it was due to injury he got during his career. It kind of ended his career early. But obviously, we Big Al and Ken, they're like, we were there. They always say that any good or great team down in England always got this backbone of the Scottish players through it.
That's sweet. I read you were an ever-present in the Villa side that won the First Division title. What a season that was for Villa. It's never been repeated, obviously.
Yeah. I mean, I think it was great. I was probably six or seven or so were ever-present, and I think I was down to the levels of fitness we did have, because I think what they say is that the fitter you are, the less chance you have of picking up injuries.
Right, yeah.
But yeah, it was after the initial bedding in season, me and we got off to a decent start early and late in the season, like, and things just developed from there, and, you know, we're looking to do well, but we're not thinking we're going to win the league. But as the season wore on, you're thinking we're here, we're there, and we're competing with like Ipswich. And
that's right. Was that Bobby Robson's Ipswich team?
Well, Ipswich is a very good team, very good manager who played very good football, and they had a very strong squad at the time. We two or three Scotsmen through the team. John Walker scored a lot of goals for them, and George Burnley. Right back, so they were a very strong team, and they had introduced some of the first foreigners into the English First Division with Arnold Muren and Franz Tyson played for them, very good players.
Was that the year they won the UEFA Cup as well?
And that was possibly maybe one reason they hadn't been involved in that. There may have been more an opportunity for them to win the league as opposed to ourselves. But obviously the league is decided over a period of an amount of games over the season, and at the end of the day we were there at the top of the league.
The best team always win the league. That's for sure.
Sorry?
The best team always win the league.
It's judged over the games you play, and obviously we were in the top of the league.
Amazing.
Albeit they went on and had success with a European competition. The most disappointing thing of that season was the fact that our last game against Arsenal, we actually 2-0, but that was a day that that Ipswich were playing Middlesbrough.
Okay.
Now we've got the striker we've got to thank. It was a foreigner. We've got to thank for scoring goals against Ipswich that day. But obviously, up in Middlesbrough meant that regardless of what the result we had, we'd actually won the league that day. And we got a hint of that from the our supporters who were down at Arsenal on the day.
Aye.
Toys it was coming from him towards the end of the game, like, you know.
How did that?
But obviously, that, at the end of that game, that was the start of great celebrations, obviously.
So, how did it feel, and how, what were the celebrations like with the squad and in the city when Villa won that first title?
Well,
it was 70 years, wasn't it?
Sorry?
It was 70 years since they'd last won it, wasn't it?
Well, I can't recall. But it was possibly, it could have been that length of time, yeah. It was just the fact that the success we'd had throughout the season and, you know, the culmination of other games and everything else. And obviously, I said disappointing to get beat the last game, but to actually win the league, that was the main thing, you know, regardless how you win it.
No, that's it.
It was a great time. And obviously, as I say, great celebrations in the dressing room afterwards. The champagne was flowing all over the place. And our journey back to Birmingham was a long journey because obviously there was a lot of fans that came down for the last game. So the road was quite busy on the way back. But again, we were unaware of that in the bus with the amount of drink that's been consumed at the time.
It's obviously different days then. Those boys could enjoy themselves away from football as well, could they?
Yeah, obviously it's a different game now, obviously. I mean, you can still enjoy it like away from football, but you haven't got the same freedom. I mean, they've got everything to help them to get success these days with the amount of staff they've got, nutritionists and dietists and whatever. You know, and the training, the facilities they've got now, it's there for success. Like, you know, we didn't have that sort of thing then. And, but as I say, it was a great celebration to go back to Birmingham, whatever time of night. And it obviously got it made the wives aware we were going out in a town. I was a big supporter who owned a nightclub in a town, so that's where we ended up at Boogies in town in the Birmingham City Centre that night. So a bit of a sore head, a long lie the following morning.
You didn't have to get up early for an open top bus tour on a...
Well, we didn't have too much a long lie because obviously the kids as well, like, so
they're jumping on the heat of you.
they had to be looked after.
Brilliant. Did the next season, obviously, Villa went one better and sealed the European Cup, and that's when it really was the Champions League, because only the champions qualified back then, didn't they?
Yeah, that's true. A different setup now. I think it's all money orientated these days.
Aye, definitely.
But obviously, it was just the champions who qualified for the European Cup, as it was known as then.
Yeah.
We'd obviously qualified for it, and we'd no thoughts about winning it. Like, you know, we just thought we're in the European Cup, let's go and take it game by game, and obviously that's what we did.
And what a run it was.
You know, it's now obviously 40 years this year to win the league, and it's 40 years next year to win the European Cup next May.
Oh, well, so there'll be big celebrations again.
Yeah, well, obviously we're going to have some sort of celebration, but in the process, we were going to organise things for this, obviously, this season, but unfortunately, the COVID, it's knocks everything to touch, like, so we're hoping that we'll have some celebrations at the end of this season.
And the club when I let you get away, we're not celebrating that, surely?
Well, no, it's in discussions in our regard and everything else. On the date of the 26th of May, obviously, when we won the European Cup. So there is things in place and getting organised for that date.
What a run it was. When did the lads start believing, you know, we could win this cup?
It's a difficult one because, as I say, we just took one game at a time. Mm. Obviously, Valour was the first one, and obviously the game was kind of settled with our first game at Villa Park.
Aye.
We'd gone across to Iceland and knew that, obviously, barring a disaster, we're in the next round, like, you know, and obviously, which was the case. And as I say, we just took each game as it came along, and obviously, the further you went, the stronger the opposition was that you were playing against. And it was possibly just after the semi-final, we thought, God, we're in the final now, we've got a great chance, you know, it's one game.
Mm-hmm.
Was it the fact we got that far?
Aye.
You know, and the teams were actually beating the process with even going having to go to Russia and suffer the circumstances over there in which we played. The facilities we had to stop at, like the hotel was like a Salvation Army, hostel like, you know. But we even had to take our own food across here because of the thought of worrying about the sort of food that would be available over there. Not knowing what the Russians might try and do.
Dirty tactics. Ron Saunders resigned during that season, didn't he? Why was that? And was that a bit
He resigned prior. I'm trying to think which game he resigned prior to. I think it was a resigned prior to the Dynamo Kiev game. Dynamo Kiev game. Now, he had a disagreement with the board or some something. Nobody really knows what the reason was behind it.
No.
And it was a shock to all the players. I think only Dennis Mortimer was aware that something was brewing because the manager had been in touch with him the night before. And he said, look, he says, I've had a bit of a problem with the board and that sort of thing, but don't worry, everything's all right, we'll see you tomorrow. And of course, tomorrow came along and he didn't appear. He handed in his resignation in the morning. So, as I say, Dennis was probably the only one that had any inkling of any sort of problem at all.
Yeah.
But that was a major shock to the team. And obviously, to be at the stage you were as far as European Cup was concerned, you know, it was a real shock.
His assistant took over, though, did he? So, did that sort of keep a bit of stability?
Well, his assistant he took over, but his assistant was a chief scout.
Okay.
Who Tony Barton, who came to watch me at Easter Road, and obviously put me forward as a chance to go to Aston Villa. So I've got a lot to thank Tony for. God rest him. He's obviously since died, like, you know. But Tony, he got the title of assistant manager because he was chief scout at the time.
Okay.
And if he'd only been a title of chief scout, he wouldn't have been given a club car to travel around the country and watch players at the club who are interested in signing or looking to sign. So because of that, Ron Saunders gave him a title of assistant manager, which he was entitled to get a club car. So that being the case, the board obviously thought, well, Tony's assistant manager. We've obviously put an assistant manager in place of the manager. And his assistant was the first team coach, who was Roy McLaren.
Okay.
Who you would have thought possibly would have been more entitled to get the manager's job as opposed to Tony. But the two of them came into them, they were quite humble guys, and they were aware that the team he had was strong enough and had the experience enough to just continue what things had been set in place already by Sir Ron Saunders. So that's basically what they did. They just let the team play as they were playing, had been playing, and with no changes. Obviously, only changes were at any time, any injuries or whatever, which happened in the first game, because in Russia, I actually played central defender.
Okay.
I think Alan Evans had picked up an injury, so I played alongside Big Ken McNaught in that game.
Okay.
As I said, I had deputised at times in the defence for the fact I'd had a bit good experience as a right back and a central defender at my time at Hibs, like, you know.
Aye, yeah. Going into the final, obviously in Rotterdam, Bayern Munich must have been heavy favourites, were they, for that final? They had some great players in that squad, didn't they? Brightner, Hoeneß, and Rummenigge.
Yeah.
No easy task. Yeah.
Brightner, Hoeneß, Rummenigge, go through them all. Aye. Hagenthaler. You know, they were a top team in Europe, weren't they?
Aye. Yes,
you know. And we've gone into the game quite relaxed. It's a great achievement for us just to get to the final.
No pressure.
You know, I mean, you think on what our thoughts were at the start of the season about how far we could go in the European Cup.
Yeah.
We hadn't even looked at the bonus system for the various rounds of the European Cup or even winning the European Cup. Because what we got for winning it was peanuts compared to they were supposed to on £10,000 a man or even more by a Munich, which was a lot of money then. So it's probably helped us in the long run because we have no thoughts in our mind about financial rewards at the end of all. It was just a matter of we've got the European Cup final. Let's go and play our game and and see how we get on. And obviously the results there in history. So it was, as I say, great achievement, great game.
But what are your memories of the game itself?
Well, it's obviously Bayern Munich, the team we were, and obviously to be very aware of the type of players. Obviously, Breitner, which was in my area of the pitch, was a top player, a very creative player for them. And obviously, you mentioned the strikers, Rummenigge and Hoeneß. So we've just got to try and keep the amount of ball that they get to a minimum during the game, and do what we can when we get a ball ourselves, which we were quite capable of doing. You know, I think what we did, we played our normal game, which the European clubs we had played against hadn't played against the real English type football, which we were, you know. At that time, I say it now, and people call the pressing game as introduced here through Pep Guardiola, which he did. But we played the pressing game as a team at that time, because on some afternoons during the training, we would play against, initially it was a reserve team, and then it was the youth team. We would play games in an afternoon.
Okay.
Without the strikers, where they got the ball, and then we had to close them down and get the ball off them as quick as we could. That to us was a pressing game, and that's why we played in the league and in the European competition, the European Cup. We played in the European Cup.
And it obviously teams
hadn't been obviously used to playing that type of game where they're getting closed down very quickly and not getting time on the ball.
And
that was part of a success during the competition, European Cup.
There was another spanner that went in the works in that start of that game. I think your keeper had a bit of an injury, didn't he? And Nigel Spink had to come off the bench and had a game of his life.
Well, again, that was something that I think probably only Ken McNaught was aware of.
Okay.
As far as players are concerned, but Ken was his roommate.
Okay.
But we were aware that Jimmy had injured himself in training. He'd done his neck muscle or whatever, but there was no word of not being able to play the game.
No.
But Jimmy was a member of the Man United squad when they won the European Cup in 1968. But he was on the bench. So he's thinking, well, if I'm on the bench, I've got a European Cup medal for that, but I'd like to start the game, but if I'm going to have any chance of winning a European Cup medal again, I want to start the game. So I think that's what was in Jimmy's mind at the time. He thinks he'd probably think, I'll get off with it for a period of time, which fortunately we did.
He
wasn't put under any great pressure. It wasn't called upon to make any great saves early in the game. And the sight of Jimmy walking off the pitch for the gloves and taking his gloves off and that sort of thing. I think, well, what's going on here? And obviously Nigel was just shocked on the bench to be told to get warmed up. You're going on.
It's tough for a goalie to come into games as well.
But as you said, that was the start of a great career for Nigel Spink.
Yeah, brilliant.
You know, the fact he wasn't aware of it, he probably had no nerves at all whatsoever about starting the game or whatever.
No, that's it.
So he came on and early doors, he said, he's got an easy ball, cross ball for a goalkeeper, which gave him confidence early doors. And then after that, he had two or three great saves, one down to his right at the near post and things like that. But again, we've defended it, helped Nigel, as if Nigel's defended his goals well, and the defence in front of him have done the job as well. Brilliant. I mean, there was one stage where Hoeneß had an overhead kick which just went past the right hand upright, which was a close thing.
I watched the highlights last night before speaking to you, and it was some overhead kick, that like.
As I say, unfortunately, it's the wrong side of the goals, like for him, like. But for us, it was good to see that.
Brilliant.
As I say, we've defended well and created what we do, and obviously with the moment we got the goal was a build up with Gary Shaw feeding Tony Morley, and Tony's going down the wing and turning his full back inside and out one way or another, and then got across the goals, and Peter Forty was in the right place at the right time. Mm-hmm.
I've heard,
hit off his shin and off the post and hit the back of net.
I've heard a few fans actually thought it had gone past the post for a start. Did any players think that?
Well, our fans were behind that goal, so it may have looked like that initially. But when you see the net bulging at the back, you realise it's in the back of net. That's us 1-0 up.
Amazing. Describe that feeling then at a final whistle when you realise you're a European champion, because it's a rare club of Scottish players to do that.
Well, as I said, from then onwards, I can't recall when actually how long it was to the end of the game, 10, 15 minutes, whatever. But the worst thing was, there was a clock up at the top of the terracing. So obviously, you're always looking at the top of the clock. You think, that clock's stuck. It's not moving. Like, you know, how long is it going to be before we come to the end of the game? And I say, we got the end of the game. We were still there, 1-0 up. So I say the celebrations, I thought of actually winning the European Cup. It was just fantastic. Obviously, we'll celebrate with the players, and then I've run to the edge of the pitch because my mum and dad and my sister, older sister Winifred and Dougie, her husband, were there, and my brother as well. It was across to celebrate with them, and then it was a matter of then getting all the players together to go up and receive the cup. I mean, I was with Dennis Mortimer the other day, and he said it was in a question. It was at a gentleman's evening at the club just up the road from me. He said, when we won the cup, he says, it was great. Everybody's celebrating this. Of course, maybe the captain had gone up the steps to go up and receive the cup. But I've got there, and I'm there on my own. He says, all the players are still on the pitch and celebrating in front of the fans who'd come across. He says, it seemed like an eternity waiting for the rest of the squad to come and go up and receive the cup.
Amazing.
Dennis, as he said, has been captain of the team, and receiving the European Cup was a fantastic thing for him, but obviously it's great for ourselves as well.
That's it. And hey, you've lived Abdi's dream. We're running about Bath Academy playing football, and we're dreaming of lifting that European Cup, and you got to do it. And there's obviously nobody else, if you ever in here, has done that, really.
No, that's true. It's me. You do think back to being at Bath Academy and me playing in the team's end. You think where you've been, and you always remember the PE teacher then. Mr. Horn, I forget his first name now. Horn was his first name. But you just can't imagine at that stage. You can't look that far forward and you think, this is how my life's going to pan out. No. This is the success you're going to have.
Amazing. You put the cherry on top the following season, beating Barcelona in the Super Cup, I think, didn't you?
Yeah, that's true. As I say, we didn't do so well the following season in the league. I don't know, just maybe the first season and winning the league and then the European Cup that next season. We maybe kept all our energies for the European Cup. I don't know, but in the following season, Super Cup, the winners were the Cup winners in the European Cup. We played Barcelona in a two-legged affair, and obviously we went to the Nou Camp, and it's a fantastic stadium. The Nou Camp is it's just mean. Obviously, you're there, and you've got to go around, and you've got to go at the top, the main stand there, which obviously we did. At some stage where we're across, and you're looking down, and it's like ants on the pitch when you see people on the pitch that's our height. But again, we've competed with them and beat them over the two games and beat them well, and they ended up, I think, with 9 players on the pitch when we finished off the game at Villa Park.
Okay, angry.
You know, I think they weren't used to being beaten, I don't think.
No.
Possibly by a team like Aston Villa, who weren't seen as a big club in England.
That's right. Now, you moved to Birmingham, didn't you, after Villa? How did that go down with the both sets of supporters?
Yeah, well, obviously, at the time, obviously, what happened with Saunders leaving, obviously Tony was manager, and obviously things hadn't gone too well with Tony in his first full season, which was the season after we'd won, as far as league was concerned. Obviously, the next season was his first full season, I should say, after the European Cup success. It didn't go too well, and football being football, the chairman at the time, who was Doug Ellis, who wasn't a great admirer of Ron Saunders, who was There was a battle between Ron Saunders and Doug Ellis when I arrived at the club.
Okay.
And Ron Saunders won the battle, and at that stage, Doug Ellis had left the club. But he came back. And where was it amongst us as players and people around the game that his plan was to get rid of the Ron Saunders players over a period of time. So obviously that gradually happened. And a new manager was brought in. It was Graham Turner from Shrewsbury Town. He came in at the start of all the season. He spoke to all players and he said, look, you're all on trial. He says, there's no favourites with me in one way or another. It's up to yourself to prove yourself over the first six or so games, and then I'll be making decisions after that. So that's how it was. We started off the season, myself and Dennis, who was actually kind of shown or given the news at the time. We played in all six games leading up to the prior to the, our meetings with Graham Turner after the six games, and we'd done well enough to justify keeping our place in the team. So we had a meeting with Graham Turner, and he told myself individually, myself and Dennis, that we weren't any part of the future of the club, and it's up to ourselves. We want to try and get ourselves another club. You're welcome to do that. We won't stand in your way. So obviously my thoughts were, well, if I'm not wanted here, I've got to try and get somewhere else. And at that stage, I got a phone call from Billy McNeil, who was manager at Man City at the time. It was 7:30 one Saturday morning. I got a call. He says, look, I've heard it. You're not in the plans for Villa now. He says, what's your thoughts? I says, well, obviously I'm looking to move, like, you know, and get regular football somewhere else. He says, well, look, I'm interested. He says, we're just meeting up now to go up to play Carlisle. So obviously they were in the second division, maybe the third division then. We're off to Carlisle this morning, but don't do anything until I get back in touch with you. So that's how that was left. And then obviously after a couple of weeks of that, I mean, David Pleats at Luton had showed interest. And Luton were a decent team at that time under David Pleats. You know, so there's some decent players. So I'd gone down to see a game, Luton against Chelsea. Obviously, the problem down there was obviously the plastic pitch at the time. You know, they were one of the first clubs, not the first club, but one of the first clubs to have the plastic pitch, which I don't think would have suited my play. But obviously, the fact he's shown interest, I'd gone down and had a chat with him and watched the game. And then I thought maybe going to Luton, we'd actually thought, well, we're going to go to Luton where we were look to buy a house, and it definitely wasn't going to be in Luton, that's for sure. So we'd looked at Bedford, looked around Bedford, which was just up the road from Luton, about half an hour, 40 minutes away. So it'd been easy to travel back and forth to training. And then obviously thinking at the back of my mind, obviously Billy McNeil's still there, but as I say, nothing came of that. And with the thought of the plastic pitch and having to uproot and move my family, that sort of thing. I thought, well, Ron Saunders is at Birmingham City. He's my ex-manager. He liked me as a player. I'll give him a call. So I gave him a call. I said, look, this is my position. You're obviously aware of what's happening at the club just now. Are you interested? I says, because I'd be only too happy to come across and play for you at Birmingham City. He says, well, it's not a problem. You come across and we'll get things organised. We'll get a contract sorted out here. And and that was the end of that. Obviously, I realised it was a big thing for a player to go from Aston Villa to Birmingham City. But at the end of the day, I was just thinking myself, my family. I've uprooted the family from where we were. And being able to go back and forth, Birmingham City, training-wise and playing-wise, without any problems as far as that was concerned. Went to Birmingham City and obviously play my normal game over there, and I think the Birmingham fans accepted and appreciated me as a player for the type of player I was. Gave 100% and had a little bit of ability along with it, you know. So I had no problem with the Birmingham City supporters, and the biggest majority of Villa supporters were on the problem. I think they realised the circumstances of the club at the time.
That's right.
and they'd appreciated what I'd done for the club in my time and what I'd given to the club as far as a player was concerned. So again, I was very fortunate that both sets of fans were very good to me.
That's good. And well, what you'd achieved for Villa, quite rightly, you're a legend there, I'd imagine that whole team is.
Yeah, well, as I say, you're seen as a legend, whatever that means, like we are. As I say, it's part of a very successful time at Aston Villa, which at this moment in time, I can't see that in my lifetime, like whether it happens again. You never know, you can't see never, that's for sure.
So, I think, you played into your 40s, didn't you, with various clubs? Was that purely for the love of the game?
Yeah, well, obviously, because I was a very fit lad, as I said, so I was still fit and playing. I did play later. I finished at Birmingham City, I think it was 37 at the time, right. And still felt I was good enough to play.
Yeah.
And looking to get football after that. So I had a friend who was my teammate at Villa, who was down at Fulham, Terry Bullivant, who the club had bought from Charlton, Aston Villa bought from Charlton, to play and be a midfielder at the club, can maybe take a place at Dennis Mortimer, which unfortunately with Terry didn't happen. You know, his opportunities at Aston Villa were very restricted, and he ended up going back down to I think it was back down to Fulham or Charlton at the time. And at that time, he was an assistant with Ray Lewington at Fulham.
Oh, yeah.
So he gave me a call. He says, look, I know you're out of contract. He says, we've got a few injuries and suspensions come the start of the season. Will you be prepared to come down and help us out early on in the season? And I thought, not a problem. There's nothing else doing it. I've got a chance to get some games and play some games through him and could be in the shop window as far as other clubs wanting to see what I was capable of doing. So I've gone down there and 1 month lent, another month, another month, another month. So I stayed there most of the season, to be quite honest. And I did sign a contract come December, I think, I signed a contract. But I was only going down there possibly twice a week. And obviously playing reserve games to keep my level of fitness up, because I wasn't playing regularly in the first team. So towards the end of the season, prior to the transfer deadlines, that's in March time, whenever it was then, I kind of spoke with Ray and Fulham and said, look, if you want to move on and go somewhere else between now and end of the season, we're not going to sign you away. So I spoke with lad Paul Taylor at Walsall, and he said, yeah, we'll have you. So that last couple of months of the season, I was at Walsall. And my former teammate, Gary Shaw, he was there as well at the same time. So that's kind of where I finished my full pro game. But then after that season was finished, obviously I was finished at Walsall. Still felt I was fit enough to play. At that time it was the Vauxhall Conference, it was known as then. And there was teams there with Kidderminster, which was seen as my local team. And there was a lot of manager there, Colin Addison, who I knew well. So I phoned up Kidderminster and said, yeah, very interested, we'll have a chat. And they were prepared to sign me. But then I got a phone call from a lad, Chris Wright, at Stafford Rangers. And they gave me the opportunity there as well. I don't know what the reason, what swayed me towards Stafford, so I ended up signing for Stafford Rangers. Again, it was part-time football. And at that stage, I'd then started work as a financial advisor with a couple of guys who looked after my pensions and everything as far as football pension was concerned when I was involved in the pro game. So they had a company where they were recruiting guys who had experience of the financial and the qualifications. So I had previously worked with GA, General Accident, who were forming their own financial arms alongside the state agency offices I had. So I'd gone there and got my qualifications, my financial qualifications there at that period of time. In actual fact, prior to starting that job, I actually got a phone call from Jim McLean. In Dundee United. and he wanted me to be come up and be his assistant with him at Dundee United, which was an unbelievable opportunity, really.
Yeah.
Totally out of the blue. Never expected it. 1 minute would I expect that. But I was kind of a man of my word, really, and I'd committed myself to GA, and I thought, yeah, you could go back up, but there's no guarantees. Football's football. You know, you don't know what the future holds. So I'd said to Jim, I says, I really appreciate the call and the fact you thought highly enough of me to offer me the job. But I've already committed myself, and I feel I've got to go with the job with the general action, which I did.
And then you ended up working for the PFA, did you?
Sorry?
You ended up working for the PFA as well, did you?
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. I got the qualifications with the financial services with GA, and then I got the opportunity to join up with the two guys who had looked after my pension, who were a separate company to the PFA at the time. But they were amalgamating with the PFA, and PFA Financial Management was the name of the new company. So they said, look, you've got the qualifications. We're looking to bring in ex-footballers who've got qualifications because they know the game and they know how things run as far as football's concerned. And I got the opportunity to go with them, so I jumped at the chance of that. And and then I was there for a long period of time. I can't recall just how long I'd been there for, probably best part of possibly 14, 15 years, in which obviously latterly I'd been married to the financial manager of the offices in Birmingham for the PFA.
Amazing. Great career. Now, I always kind of end up with people's best 11s that we played with. I know you're maybe pushed for time, but if you could take me through it very quickly, that would be great.
I don't think it's going to be much of a problem because during my time, my most successful time, I don't think I can go past the lads I played with at Aston Villa. You know, so that as much as I was aware of the level of players at Hibs, as you say, Pat Stanton, Alec Cropley before he's left, you know, long after I joined there, John Blackley, John Brownlee, Alan Gordon, Arthur Duncan, Alec Edwards, all great players. But I think if I'm going to be fair to the players who are successful with it, it would be the European Cup team. Again, you've got one or two players who played along at different positions. You had left backs like Gary Williams and Colin Gibson there. The odd time at Dave Geddes, who's a big friend of mine, came into the team as well. But, you know, they look at the team we had there with such a great team, great balance of team, a team who understood everybody in the team, what they were capable of, everything else, and helped and supported one another throughout every game. Like, you know, so I wouldn't have to be able to go any further than the European Cup team.
Brilliant. Okay. I'll just finish off with some quick fire questions, and that's us done. So the first thing that comes into your head for these ones, the first thing is one thing you would change about football to improve it.
To improve it?
Yeah.
I think we'll probably have to get rid of VAR. It's causing so many problems these days. Whether it'll be a good thing or a bad thing, I don't know, but it seems to cause so much problems. It's not working as well as I thought. I think they thought it would.
Yeah, okay. Who would you like to play you if they made a movie of your life?
Me. I'm not into films and that sort of thing, so you've got a difficult one there. I've got no idea. Maybe obviously it's the older actors I'm aware, like your Paul Newman and people like that. That's the type of guys that I know, so something like Paul Newman.
Yeah, okay.
I wouldn't be averse to him playing me.
I'll maybe know the answer to this one, but one other club you'd have loved to have played for?
Oh, obviously, you know, without a doubt, Aberdeen. That was my club, and it always is my club. Like, you know, I always look for the results, not doing so well in Highlight, but I always look for results there.
Brilliant. Okay. If you could bottle one moment of your career to relive over again, what would it be?
One moment, it would be winning the European Cup.
Right. Okay.
Without a doubt.
Very last question. What pro player, past or present, would you say is closest to you in terms of style, attributes and personality on the pitch?
closest to me.
Yeah.
Well, I was looking, I just saw the Arsenal game the other night, and and I'm very like the guy, I forget his name now, Emile Smith Rowe. Yeah, I saw him because Villa was supposed to be keeping him early in his close season, early season. I thought, and I loved him, haven't I? Because I've liked him over a period of time, just watching him, like, you know. So he possibly scores more goals than I will, like, you know, I did. But he's very competitive and creative sort of guy. And he works very hard in the middle of the park, and is a big player in the Arsenal team just now.
Aye, that's right. And that's us done, Des. Thank you very much for coming on and joining me on the show today. It's been an absolute pleasure hearing about your stories and your fantastic career. So thank you very much.
No, I appreciate it. It's good reliving the memories, that's for sure. They'll always be there, and always great memories.
Well, thank you so much to Des for taking time out to talk to me for the podcast. It really was fascinating to hear about his journey. If you want to know his 1-11 for his best 11 team, then just Google that famous Aston Villa European Cup winning side. That's who he selected. And thank you all for listening, as always. If you are new to the podcast, then please go and catch up with the back catalogue on Apple, on Google, or on Spotify. Yeah, we're on all those places. You can find us, just search for Beyond Canal Park. You can interact with us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram as well. Just give us a like and a follow, and you'll keep up to date with news and competitions and the like. And that's your lot for this week. We'll see you again next weekend. Bye for now.